Reading from Sri Bhajan Rahasyam by Thakur Bhakti Vinod. Panchamayam Sadhana. This is his description of Nam Bhajan in relation to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Shikshastakam. Fifth verse, Ayinanda Tanushakinkaram Patitam Bham Vishame Vambudo Kripya Tava Parapankaja Stita Duli Sadrisham Vichintaya. Yesterday we were discussing about Kinkari or Kinkaram. This first line of the verse, Ayinanda Tanuja Kinkaram. And then we mentioned how the entire chapter of Panchama Sarana discusses basically the meaning of this word Kinkaram, so we can understand how much this is important to understand our identity as a Kinkara or a Kinkari or a Kimkaromi. Because this, if we understand and realize this, then we'll become very attached to Krishna. And this is what this level of bhajan is called, Krishna Sakti. So we had a few more notes. Because actually all the verses of this chapter about Kinkaram. So what we want to do is read from a few notes more we have about Kinkari. And then finish the word-for-word description of the verse. And then go back to the Bhajan Rahasyam. And go through the different verses that explain the three different concepts of Kinkari. We mentioned yesterday there's a gradual advancement of attachment to Krishna, this level of asakti, because all of these things, there's different levels of ruchi, different levels of anartha nivritti, different levels of nishta. It's not that nishta is one. Everyone that's nishta is on the same level. There's different levels. They have all these different categorizations. Kanishta bhakta, kanishta adhikari, madhyam, Uttam, and even the acharyas break it down even lower than that. They say Kanishta, 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 Madhyam, Kanishta, Uttam. It becomes, three becomes nine. Nine different levels of adhikar, or eligibility for devotional service. Eligibility for pure devotional service, or expressions of it. Well, the same thing, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, that this concept of Kinkaram, Ayinanda Tanuja Kinkaram, has three different levels. One is that the general conception or meaning of the word Kinkaram is, I am a servant. Then the second conception is that not only am I a servant, but I have a particular rati, a particular seva rati. I'm attached, or rati, I have attachment for Krishna, or rather, rati actually means bhava. But he's saying that this Kinkaram, this mood of attachment as a servant, matures into a particular mood, wanting to serve Krishna in a particular rati. And he calls this, I have dasya rati. And that dasya rati, which I explain, can be in Sakya, Vatsalya, or Madhurya. And then the third and final expression or realization of this concept of Kinkari Bhav or Kinkaram is that I have Madhura rati, or this feeling of conjugal love, towards Radha and Krishna, but specifically as Radharani's Kinkari, Radha Kinkari. That means to become an eternal maidservant of Radharani or Palyadasi. So these three levels of Kinkara are explained here in this chapter, because the entire chapter is about this. And the entire bhajan at this level is all about this type of bhav, this Kinkara bhav. So, regardless of the particular form that one's sarup may take, the basis of any spiritual body is selfless service. In this verse, Mahaprabhu addresses himself as a kinkara, a servant. In other words, I mentioned yesterday, the word kim means what, and karomi, may I do. So the word implies, how can I serve you? This is the only question that one needs to ask of God and Guru. We ask so many questions, as they have the phrase in English, that a fool can ask more questions than a wise man can answer. This is a very popular phrase. Well, what about this? And why is that? And what is this? Well, there's one tape where someone asked Prabhupada a question about the structure of the universe, which is something in fifth canto. And he was asking about the elliptical shape of the galaxies and how they interface with one another, and black holes in space, and space folding inside of space. And if you go inside the hole, you go into another space, and it gets on endless space out there. you can get really spaced out. So he was asking Prabhupada some very technical questions about the structure of the universe. And Prabhupada said, listen, I can't be expected to remember all these things. I can't be expected to remember all these things. But if you want to find out, you can look in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam. You may find your answer there. So, a fool can ask more questions than a wise man can answer. So here, this point is that this is what Mahaprabhu is saying. He's saying, Nandan Nandan, I want to serve you. How may I serve you? Kim karomi. I'm your kinkara, and maybe I become your kinkari. Kinkara means generic servant, male or female, and kinkari means female servant, or dasi, palyadasi, maid servant. So this is the question from beginning to end. This is the question when one surrenders to Guru from day one. How can I serve you? And this is the question in Nikunja Lila. Oh, Rupa Mantri, how can I serve you? Of course, you don't have to ask anymore. At that time, everything's going organically and smoothly. You know what's to be done. And even then, sometimes Rupa asks you. She says, hey, Kinkari, let go of that rope. Stop fanning their lordships who are sleeping in a flower bed in Nidiban. Now they're about to wake up. So I want you to go pick some flowers. Brindadevi put one sari underneath this parija tree. And so many flowers have fallen there on top of that sari. I want you to go pick them up and make a nice, beautiful, fresh garland to offer Priya Priyatam when they wake up. So then, when that Mandri hears that command, or it's called Sakhi Agya, or order, or request, then she says, yes, certainly. And she lets go, gives up that ecstatic service of pulling on the vine ropes which are moving the ceiling fan above the divine couple, and goes to do that service. So this is the question. Mahaprabhu is setting the standard here. You want to ask questions? This is the only question. How can I serve you? What can I do? But usually this is the last question that's asked. We see, at least our experiences, and as some kind of teacher of some sort, is that people will come and to teacher and they'll ask so many questions. This philosophy, this tattva, that tattva, and this esoteric point and that esoteric point, three kinds of vritti and kamanuga. Bhav, there's three divisions of Rati and Samanjasa and Sadharani and Samartha and can you explain the three types of Radharanis and Vyogini and Yogini and Samyogini and they ask all these mind-bending, you know, heart-stretching questions and they for hours on end, 10 hours a day, 11 hours a day, month after month, and never once do they ever say, Maharaj, is there anything I can do for you? Is there any service? Can I render some service or help, do some help you around the ashram or anything? So it's quite an interesting experience. So much philosophy, but the whole point, all this philosophy, all this tattva siddhanta, and all this philosophy and all these answers and all these questions and all this removal of shamshaya or doubts is supposed to bring us to the point of asking this one question, Kim Karomi? Ainanda Tanuja Kin Karomi. Oh, son of Nandan. Oh, servant. Oh, Nanda Nandan Das. Oh, son of Nanda Nandan. That's Krishna. Or Nanda Nandan Das. That's Guru. Oh, Krishna, oh, Guru. Kim Karomi. How can I serve you? This is quite appropriate. This is the only question that one needs to ask of God and Guru. Because if you ask this question, then all your other answers will be given. If you ask Guru, how can I serve you, or Nanda Nandan, and then they tell you or engage you in service, by rendering that service, you contact Bhakti. And when you contact Bhakti, then you contact Ladini and Samvit. And when you contact Ladini and Samvit, you become happy and all your questions become answered. This is a nice story of this gentleman that came from Calcutta to Mayapur to meet Bhakti Sananda Saraswati. And he was a big professor. He was a professor of religion, University of Calcutta. So he was a very prestigious person, very learned, educated person. He knew Sanskrit, Bengali, everything. So he came to see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And he said, I have some very deep questions on Tattva Siddhanta I want to ask you. And Bhakti Siddhanta said, well, I'm a little busy now. Maybe you can go and talk with the pujari and the Didi department. Maybe you can talk. I think she needs a chair. Someone can get a chair. Gaurav? They're a little slow on the service concept. This very principle that we're discussing, Kim Karomi, how can I serve you? We're just listening about it. Here's an opportunity to serve a Vaishnavi. And everyone's busy trying to understand what we're talking about. So we can get some practical realization. Serving Vaishnavi or Krishna is same to same. So this big professor, he was a little bit miffed, a little bit set back or put off, you could say, that he had come all the way from Calcutta to meet the Acharya, the Gaudiya Math. And he said, I have some serious questions of Tattva Siddhanta to ask you. He said, fine, can you go to the Didi kitchen? You can get your answers from the head Vajari. I'm a little busy now. So he said, he didn't know what to make of this. So then he went to the Didi kitchen. The head Vajari said, he introduced himself, that Guruji sent me here. He said, that's very fine. Can you please help me clean the dishes? Can you help me wash the pots and pans? And the man is thinking, hooray. You know, I'm a professor of religion from Calcutta University. I've come all the way from the Calcutta. In those days, they didn't have, they came by a horse or automobile or whatever. It was in the 20s. Maybe some kind of car, I suppose. But it was in the early 1930s. So then somehow the person was somewhat sincere, so he was, or maybe overwhelmed or captivated by the whole turn of events. So he started washing the pots right alongside the head Vajari. He's washing the pots and he's thinking, the whole time he's thinking, what am I doing? You know, what am I doing washing these pots? And then while he's washing the pots, he became a little bit absorbed in pot washing. Then the questions that he was mulling over in his mind, which he intended to ask Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, one by one by one, they became answered. By Super Soul, by Bhakti Devi, however you want to see it. So then upon completing that seva, or that service, Kim Karomi, he returned to meet Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, well, did you get the answers to your questions? He said, yes, I received the answers. Your disciple is a very learned disciple. He said, yes, what did you discuss? We didn't say anything. He simply engaged me in washing the pots. And by washing the pots, I got all the answers I needed. Thank you very much. I'm returning to Calcutta. So this is, as we're saying, this is the only question one needs to ask of God and Guru, is how may I serve you, Kim Karomi? Because this whole teaching of Lord Chaitanya is all about prema. Lord Chaitanya has come to give this prema, was it, pradayate? Namo Mahavaranyaya, Krishna prema pradayate. He has come to give Krishna prema. So there must be some way to get that Krishna prema. There must be some methodology or somehow it's found or contained or revealed or concealed or accessed. So he's given that secret here in the Shikshastakam. These are his heart's secrets that he's revealed to the world. So here he's giving a secret also. Because in order to get Krishna prema, we must become fully attached to Krishna. That means asakti. And to become fully attached to Krishna means to become fully attached to serving Krishna. Because that's all the Premi Bhaktis do. All the Premi Bhaktis do day and night is serve Krishna. From one service to another to another another. So this type of seva bhava we have to pick up. We have to absorb it. We have to realize it. And we have to live it. Hearing it is one thing. And then acting upon our hearing, then we realize it. And then we live it. We become living exemplars of the seva mentality. Units of service. So this is the... here he's teaching, hey Nandanandan, please give me service. That's all. He's not saying, hey Nandanandan, what's the source of the jiva? Hey Nandanandan, what's this and what's that? And is there time in the spiritual world? And hey Nandanandan, can you tell me the three types of Radharani's? Hey Nandanandan, what's the difference between, you know, this Leela and that Leela? He say, hey, Nandanandan, Kim Karomi. Only one this verse has one question. And all these eight shlokas of Shikshastakam describe Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojan. So now we're getting closer to the Prayojan. Prayojan means prema. This is where all these prayers are leading to that. They're establishing the Sambandha, then the Abhideya, then the Prayojana. So this is the Abhideya reaching to Prayojan. The Abhideya is a practice. What is a practice? Service. That's a practice, to serve. So then, since that is a practice, then our naturally our question will be, how can I serve you? Hey Nandanandan, hey Nandanandan Das, hey Guru, hey Krishna, Kim Karomi, how can I serve you? Because I'm finally realizing that is my identity. Gopi Bhartu Padakamalior Das Das and Das. Kinkari Bhav. What is this Kinkari Bhav? Kinkari, in case you get confused, it's also Manjari. The word Manjari is Kinkari. But Manjari is specific, because Manjari is female, and Kinkari is also female. But the concept of Kinkara, or being a selfless servant, that can be either male or female. But when we say Manjari, then there's no male Manjaris, there's only female Manjaris. But when we say Kinkara Bhav, that bhava of a male selfless servant, or kinkari, is that bhava of a female selfless servant. So kinkari bhava means the mood of a selfless servant. The serving ego. Because now we have the ego means ahankara. Identity. What is our identity? So our identity now is the enjoyer identity. I am the enjoyer. So the opposite of that is the servant, or the enjoyed. The serving ego, the feeling, understanding, and realization that my nature is to serve God. The serving ego, comma, the feeling, comma, understanding and realization that to have the feeling that I'm a servant, to have the understanding that I'm a servant, and have the realization that I'm a servant. That's called serving ego. This is actually my svabhav, the jiva svabhav, the jiva dharma, the jiva svabhav. My nature is to serve God. This forms the basis of one's spiritual identity. Everyone wants to know, siddhadeya, what is my eternal spiritual form, my spiritual identity? This is it. It's a feeling, it's an understanding, it's a realization. Garanga told Sanat Goswami in Madhya Lila 2108, Jivera Sarupaya Krishnera Nityadas. The eternal Sarupa, the Jiva, is Krishna Das. A servant of Krishna. A serving ego is the basis of all expressions of Bhakti Ras. So this Bhakti Ras, this flavor, this taste of love or devotion in relation to Krishna, it's the basis of all of it is service. Radharani, she's not the biggest enjoyer, she's the biggest servant. And the coward boys are also servants, and Mother Yashoda is also a servant. Everyone's serving. Whether one acts as Krishna's servant, friend, parent, or lover, all of these experiences of rasa are expressions of service intensified to different degrees. A very nice phrase. You see this? That all these different positions, whether one is a coward boy or a coward girl or Krishna's mother, father, friend, or servant, these different ratis, these different loving attachments to Krishna, these experiences of ras are expressions of service intensified to different degrees. This serving ego, kinkari bhav, is the antithesis of the enjoying ego. An identity based on material attachment in a self-centered world of I and mine. So this is Janasya Moho Yamahamameti. This is the material world. This Kinkari, Ainanda Tanaja Kinkara, this is a completely antithesis, the opposite idea, the opposite conception of the whole material world is I am Krishna's servant. I am to be enjoyed by Krishna. Because in the material world, everyone thinks God is my servant. God is my servant. He's made this creation. That's what the Christians say, isn't it? Isn't that what Christians say? God is my servant. God has made this whole world for me to enjoy. They say, God has created this whole world for me to enjoy. So that means God is my servant. I'm the enjoyer, and he's the enjoyed. And he's made all this world for me to enjoy. He is my servant, and this world he's made for my service. That's what they say. This is a Christian theology. And the antithesis, this Kinkari Bhav that Mahaprabhu was proposing, this serving ego, is exactly the opposite. And that's why the Christians say that we're were the Antichrist. They sometimes say the Hare Krishnas are against Christianity because their concept is just glorified egoism or glorified sense enjoyment. And ours is the opposite. You know, it's transcendental slavery. It's, you know, absolute submission to the enjoyment of another. Any position in the world of divine service, even that of a dust particle at Krishna's lotus feet, is desirable to the highest position in material life. So this is the point. The first line of the verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is praying, "Oh Nandanandan, I just please give me some service. Kim Karomi, please give me any service." Then then what does he say? What kind of service? "Oh, just keep me as a particle of dust. This is a big service. Let me be a dust particle hanging on your feet. That service I'll do." How that is service, I can't understand. But he's not saying, listen, like you go to the prime minister. There's the prime minister of some country. And you say, "Listen, I'm very qualified. Can you please give me some service position? Make me minister of railroads or minister of treasury." You can't imagine anyone going to the prime minister and say, "Look, you're the prime minister. Can you give me some post? Can I become a sweeper in the gutters? Can I become bungee? Can I become a bungee in Delhi? Or will you make me your toilet cleaner? I'll clean your latrine. I'll be the prime minister's toilet cleaner." I doubt anyone would ask for such a position, such a lowly, insignificant, meaningless, worthless position. But Lord Chaitanya is saying, "This is all I want. Please give me service. What service? Sita Duli Sadrisham. Just keep me fixed over there. Any old place. You won't even know I'm there. I'm rendering service in some far corner of your kingdom. You won't even see me. You won't even. I'm like the unseen servants, like they say when there's a war. It's called the servants you don't see. You don't see, and during war they never give a purple heart to the guy that cut potatoes. You know, when there's a war going on, there's so many guys cutting potatoes because they have to cook the meals for the soldier. But when they give out the purple hearts and all the different awards for bravery and chivalry and fighting, they never call in the potato peeler. Well, we'd like to call in private so-and-so or, you know, whoever, because he cut up 1 lakh of potatoes during the last war and fed all the soldiers. They don't give any awards. So he's unseen. He's unrecognized. You know, the song of the unsung, unsung hero. He's the unsung hero. So Lord Chaitanya, he's asking, give me some service post, some faraway region in your kingdom where you won't even notice me, and a very insignificant place, just some dust, some little tiny service in some corner. So he's saying, put me as a particle of dust in the bottom of your feet. Do you know what's on the bottom of your feet? You don't know until you look at them. And you have to take a lot of trouble to look at your feet. You have to sit down in a chair and pick up your leg and look at your foot. And then even then, unless you have good eyes, you can't see everything that's on there. And there's so many, and he's saying a dust particle. Unless you look very closely with a magnifying glass, you can't even see a dust particle. So just see how insignificant. He's asking for such an insignificant post. Like when devotees nowadays, they join a temple, they say, "Yes, I'm an IIT graduate. I'd like to live in a Juhu temple. Can you give me some service?" So he said, "Yes, what service would you like?" "Well, maybe I can be vice president." "I can be vice president or temple commander." I mean, although I feel a little shameful, but when I joined the LA temple, I had some qualification and some degrees and things like that from college. And I came to the temple. I had some kind of idea that I might do something big because I saw there was different posts. But I know there's, so when I said, so I, you know, that I met the temple president, so he said, "You'll work under the temple commander, and then maybe you'll do sankirtan, and like this and that. So you just be obedient to him, and I'll monitor your progress," and like this. So then so the temple commander interviewed me and said, "What do you know? What can you do with this and that?" And mostly I couldn't do anything very useful. It's kind of useless, so all the education I had, you know, I have a degree in medicine, right? So, you know, I'm not going to do surgery on a devotee. So I couldn't do much. So he said, "Listen, you know, you're not much use around here. But anyway, listen, why don't you clean the toilets?" So my first service is clean the toilets. Stita Duli Sadrisham Vichintya. So that certainly is called Nichi Seva or whatever. Very lowly service. And then I graduated to cut vegetables. No, graduated to take out the trash. And then I went from there. Then I got a degree in that, and I did postgraduate work in the kitchen, cutting vegetables. And then pretty soon I was on book distribution. Like this. So the point is that we generally think of ourselves in a very high way, and we're aspiring for some very high service post, or we're even aspiring for taking on something we're not even qualified for. That also happens sometimes. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's not asking for anything big. He's not asking for any big post or big service or any kind of special intimacy with the Lord. He's saying, just put me as a particle of dust over there. This is all I want. So this is any position in the world of divine service, even that of a dust particle at Krishna Chaitanya's feet, is desirable to having the highest position in material life. Unfortunately, most would prefer to reign in hell than serve in heaven. This is, of course, the devil's phrase. I would rather reign in hell than serve in heaven. Reign means to be the Lord, to be the ruler. So, this is a discussion of Kinkara. Some preliminary discussion, some notes we had on Kinkari Bhav. I nanda tanusha kinkaram patitam mam vishame vavambudo kripaya tava para pankaja stitaduli sadrisham vichintya. This next phrase Mahaprabhu speaks. Patit. Do you know patit? What patit means? Patita pavan? It means fallen. Purifier of the fallen. Patita pavan. Patita pavan avatar Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Kali Yuga pavan. Kali Yuga Pavan, the purifier of Kali Yuga. So Mahaprabhu is praying to Lord Krishna as he is a Patit, although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself is famous as Patita Pavan. He is a purifier of the fallen residents of Kali Yuga, the Jagais and Madais, and useless wretches of this age like ourselves, that Mahaprabhu has extended himself and extended his mercy to rescue us and save us from the throes of disaster. So now he's praying to Krishna, oh, you're my patitam. Patitam mam vishame bhavambudo. So this means that I've fallen into this ocean of poisonous ocean of sense gratification. Vishame bhava bhavambudo. I've fallen into this ocean of material existence. Terrible. The translation is this terrible ocean of material existence, or fearful ocean. It's actually poisonous. It means poisonous. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that, oh, Nandan, Nandan, due to my sinful acts, I've fallen in the dreadful ocean of material existence. Lust, anger, and envy are like crocodiles waiting to devour me. So he's making some analogy here, that this material life, birth, death, old age, disease, so much struggle, work, endeavor, anxiety, difficulties, problems, miseries. He compares it to a vast ocean, Bhava Sindure, Bhava Sagar. And in an ocean, there are so many aquatic animals, sharks and whales and sharks and crocodiles and alligators and all these different creatures. So he's comparing that these anarthas and these lust, anger, and greed, these are like crocodiles waiting to devour me. I am tossed about by the waves of material plans and anxieties. Your holy name is like a sturdy boat. By taking shelter of it, I can easily cross. So this is the idea that this verse is related to Nam Bhajan. So we're supposed to think of this verse in relation to Nam Bhajan, or chanting the holy name of the Lord, and increase our attachment to Nam and attachment to Krishna, who is not different from Nam. So we analyze the different parts of this verse, and we're begging the holy name. Nandan Nandan is also the holy name. Hare Krishna is Nandan Nandan. Hey Nandan Nandan, please engage me in service, because your service is my only salvation, your service is my only shelter, your service is my only rescue. And see, I'm asking, why am I asking for this service? Because I'm in a perilous condition. I'm floating in the middle of an ocean. I don't have any power to stay afloat any longer. My arms are very weak. My strength is failing me. Circling all around me are crocodiles. There's crocodiles and alligators of lust, anger, and greed waiting to devour me and finish me. And I'm about to drown in this ocean. And so I'm begging you, please lift me up from this ocean. And the only way out of the ocean of material existence is the service of Krishna. Without the service of Krishna, then we can never get out of the ocean. So this whole verse is very metaphorical and it's meant for deep meditation. As I mentioned, this principle of Mantra Mayupasana, each one of these verses is suitable for that, to enter deeply into the meaning, the imagery of the verse, the paintings and pictures that are mentioned here, and the moods that are here. And then these are supposed to be mixed in with our chanting of Hare Krishna. And this alone, this verse alone, with this type of meditation and this type of application, combined with the chanting of Hare Krishna, will increase our attachment to Krishna's holy name. Which means increase our attachment to Krishna, Krishna Sakti. Due to being indifferent to Krishna's service, the jiva is repeatedly drowning in the fearful ocean of material existence and always tormented by the threefold miseries of life. Conditioned souls are forever under the influence of Mahamaya. So, he thinks that the material world is very beautiful. Even though the reality is one thing, but our vision is another thing. Like our house is burning up, and we think, oh, it's very nice. It's very nice in here. The television, nice television, and the couch is nice. Every other room is on fire. There's fire and flames everywhere. The whole house is being burned down to ashes. While you're sitting in one room, oh, it's so nice in here. Nice air conditioning, television's on. I think it's so much fun. So we actually, by Maya, this is Maya's influence, this influence of Mahamaya. We think this material world is very beautiful. It's full of many wonderful attractions. This material world is like a fun amusement park. You go in these amusement parks and they have rides that go like this and like that, and you have go this way and take you here and there. And you have a lot of fun. You go up and down and go around and round, and it's like a fun amusement park, merry-go-round, etc. But when one begins devotional service, then he comes under the influence of Yogamaya and Krishna's Swarup Shakti. At that time, we come out of illusion. Then we realize that this material world is a miserable place full of suffering, and I want to get out. That's what Lord Chaitanya is saying here. Patita mam vishameva vamvado. This is realization. As one becomes attached to Krishna, then his realization becomes very deep. When a soul falls in this ocean of misery, he is completely helpless. He asks, why should one be helpless when he has his relatives? He has his friends, his family, his mother and father. But actually, if you look at them, you'll see that all of them are also struggling helplessly in this terrible ocean. And they're also being attacked. Because when we're a little boy or little girl, we think that our mother and father are very powerful. And even little boys, they sometimes challenge each other at the bus stop or whatever. The one boy will say to the other boy, my father's more powerful than you, bigger than your father. He's more powerful than your father. And the other one say, oh yeah. And say yes. And sometimes the two boys will fight to try to establish whose father is more powerful. So we actually think that they're our providers. If we have any, they're like magic workers. They're like magic mystical workers, and they can do miracles, magic miracle workers. If we fall off our bicycle and we get injured, then we run to our mother, and she has this tantric power that she just kisses us and we become cured. No matter what the wound is, we scrape our arm or leg and she just embraces us and kisses us and says, everything is okay. Tatastu. So then we think, oh yeah, everything's okay. I was at the end of the world a moment ago, but now she's done a miracle. So every mother is a miracle worker. And then every father is like, he's a God on high. He's a provider of everything. Whenever you need anything, you say, Daddy, give me this. Daddy, give me that. So you think that they're in some, they're just living happily in their own bob. They're not falling off their tricycle and they're not scratching their arm. You know, they're not suffering. But little me, I'm a little kid. I'm having all these difficulties. And when you grow up a little bit, then you start to realize, wait a minute. We are all in this together. We are all in this together. They're getting old and going to die, and I'm getting old and going to die. And they're actually suffering. My mother and father are suffering. And I'm also suffering. Actually, everybody in this house is suffering. The only guy who's not suffering is that stupid comedian on the television. And that's only a show for a half hour. He's putting on a big smile, ha ha ha. And everybody's saying, ha ha ha. And then after the show is over, everybody's, After the show is over, everyone cries. You know. In the Greek theater, they have this symbol, they have this carving, the happiness, sad and happy, whatever, happy sadness. Because sometimes it's folly and sometimes it's tragedy. So this is the duality of material life. So then one will realize that we're in a terrible ocean. We're in a Vishame Bhavambudo, an ocean of poison, a terrible ocean. And everybody's also struggling. My mother and father, friends and relatives. We're all helpless. We're being attacked. My mother and father and everyone's being attacked by six enemies. Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Moha, Matsarya, lust, anger, greed, etc. Without the mercy of the lotus feet of Krishna. Right? Stita Durli Sadrisham, or Padapankaja. Without the mercy of the lotus feet of Krishna, I cannot escape this ocean of mercy. And Prem Bhakti Chandrika, Narottam Das, he tells how to engage these six enemies. And he explains that. And then because that's what Lord Chaitanya is saying here. When he's saying this, Vishame Bhavambodo, this ocean, this terrible ocean means this ocean of material misery. And the miseries come from these things. The misery, we experience miseries because of lust and anger and envy and greed and illusion and ignorance and madness and delusion. These cause us suffering. They cause us physical suffering and emotional suffering and mental suffering, psychic suffering. So so that's Lord Chaitanya. He's taking shelter of Nanda Nandan. He's saying, please lift me out of this ocean. But Mahaprabhu here, in this analogy, Mahaprabhu is comparing material life to being lost at sea in a storm. This is practically a helpless condition, and one will only be saved by help beyond one's effort. Thus Lord Chaitanya prays to Nanda Nandan. So what Lord Chaitanya is trying to show us here is that we have to come to this realization. This exact realization we should have. There's so many analogies, so many comparisons that God could have used in his eight teachings. But this is the only one that he used to describe the material world, Bhavambudo, which is often used, that it is an ocean. So it's like you're sailing in a boat, in an ocean liner, and the ocean liner crashes into an iceberg, and you're tossed into the ocean, and you're lost at sea or just floating in the sea. What a helpless, precarious, dangerous position you're in. What to speak of just drowning or being dehydrated by the sun, lack of water and food, and eaten by some aquatic entity like shark or whatever. It's such a dangerous, on all sides there's fear and there's danger. So in that position, middle of the ocean, floating in the middle of the ocean, shipwrecked, the only thing that can save you is help from beyond. Some random stray, some helicopter has to come by and happen to notice you in the ocean. And if you're in the ocean, who can see you? Your head looks like a tiny little coconut. A little coconut floating in the water. No one can see you. And you go to Puri sometimes and you swim in the ocean. You see sometimes these fishermen. They swim out. They swim also besides going out in their little boats. But they go out sometimes and they swim. And as soon as they get about 200 meters off the shore, and you see them out there, you know, because their skin is dark and their hair is dark. And you look and you say, God, I can't, he's only 200 meters off the shore. You can't even see him. It looks like some little coconut, you know, floating in the water. Because I remember something, because I didn't wear my glasses, but I remember sometimes looking, I saw this like head there, just like this. They're sometimes floating around. Then he starts paddling and coming in. I said, oh, it's a person. It's a human being there. So imagine how insignificant the one actually is when he's in, which feels so helpless in this material world, that no one in this material world and nothing in this material world can save us but Nanda Nandan. Only he can save us, the son of Nanda Maharaj. So, as being said here, so this is what I mentioned, this verse from Prem Bhakti Chandrika. He explains in chapter 2, verse 10, about these sharks and crocodiles. It's a pretty good feat if you can engage sharks and if you can tame sharks and alligators. Alligators and crocodiles, if you can tame them. So Narottam Das Thakur and Prem Bhakti Chandrika, he's giving us an idea. Because these sharks and, these crocodiles and alligators, they keep trying to devour us. They try to eat us and devour us moment to moment. So he's saying, well, actually, rather than serving them, rather than rendering service to them and giving them attention, you can engage them in your service. So he's saying, this is his prayer in Prem Bhakti Chandrika. Because there's lust and anger and greed and all these things. So Narottam is saying, I will engage my lust, which means kam. Kam means lust or intense desire. I'll engage my lust in eagerness to serve Krishna. So lust means a pushing to enjoy the body, especially man, woman, usually. But it can mean kam. The word kam means any type of material enjoyment where one is very eager and physically and mentally being forced or pushed to enjoy eating or any type of material sense pleasure. I'll engage my lust in eagerness to serve Krishna. It's a very interesting point. I will use my anger or krodha towards those who envy the devotees. I'll be very greedy, like lobha. We're greedy. We want more and more things for ourselves. We have sufficient money, but we want to collect more money. Or we have sufficient clothing, but we want to buy more and more clothing, the newest fashion or another one or a different one. Although we have so many, we have enough clothing to get by sufficiently, but we, due to greed, we want more and more of anything. I will be greedy to hear Hari Katha in the association of devotees. This is a very nice use of greed. That's the nectar hound, right? Very mad after the nectar. Nectar books. Or Dasara Sutta, he has his, publishes these books called Nectar Books. Everyone is after the nectar. So we should be greedy for hearing Hari Katha. I will be greedy. And then moha. Moha means to be illusioned. Be bewildered about our identity, or bewildered about this, what is the purpose of this world, or the purpose of my life. So he says, I will be illusioned, moha. I will be illusioned if I fail to achieve my worshipful Lord. He says, this is illusion. If I fail to attain my Lord, this is the illusion. I will be illusioned if I fail. It's funny because in the material world, no one is interested in attaining God. No one is interested in realizing God, and they think they're living quite a real life. But the very life they're living, which is in forgetfulness of God or ignorance of God, is totally illusion. And they're totally in moha. They're totally in illusion about the purpose of life and the goal of human life. But they think it's quite real and quite proper and correct. And he's saying that, I have no interest in this world, but I will be illusion. I will consider myself to be illusion if I don't realize God. Whereas a materialist, you know, he thinks it's illusion to realize God. He said, God is illusion. God is dead. In the 70s, they used to walk around with t-shirts, God is dead, there is no God. God is dead. I buried Paul. Right? This, I don't believe in Jesus, I don't believe in, I just believe in Yoko and me. Right? There was a famous poet in the 70s who sang songs like this. I don't believe in Jesus, Buddha, Krishna, Ram, anybody. I just believe in Yoko and me. And finally, he had to believe in a Goli. Because Goli means bullet. Because this famous poet was shot dead on the street. Well, you don't believe in God, but you can believe in Mrityu Sarva Harascham. Krishna says, Mrityu Sarva Harascham in Gita. He says, you don't believe in me, but now I will come as death and force you to believe. Dum, dum, dum. So that was the end of the poet. And no more Yoko. So this, he's saying that I will be illusion if I fail to achieve my worshipable Lord. Then mada, this calm crowed low mada means intoxication. Be crazy. He said, I will become intoxicated by chanting the glories of Krishna. So usually people become intoxicated. I mean, literally, intoxicated means to be in the poison. Have the poison inside of you. Toxin means poison. So when the poison is inside of you, it means the toxin's in you. Toxin means poison. They write on these chemicals, toxic chemical, poisonous. Be careful, don't touch. If you swallow this and drink baking soda or water or whatever, milk or something, induce vomiting if you swallow this. So it's toxic poisoning. So toxin means poison. So intoxicated means that you're in the poison. So he's saying, I want to be intoxicated. I want to be totally intoxicated by chanting the glories of Krishna. So here, Narottam Das is giving a secret of how to use these material contaminations or these anarthas in the service of Krishna. So this next word we have here, Ayinanda Tanasya Kinkaram Patitam Vam Mishameva Vambudo. So now he says, Kripaya. Kripaya, kripa, kripakaro. Everyone knows the word kripa means mercy. So he's saying, be merciful upon me. Because he's saying, listen, I'm petitioning you for service, I'm begging you for service, Nandan, and my position is really bad. I'm really in a very, very terrible position. All around me is misery and danger. And I'm begging you, please be merciful to me. It is impossible to get out of the ocean of material existence without the mercy of God or His devotee. It's an interesting analogy here. By nature, sugar cane is full of juice. There's so much ras. It's called gana ras. Gana means thick. Thick ras. Ganaras. We say Ganasham. Krishna is very thick with ras, very dark in color. Rasaraj, Akila Rasamurti. So sugarcane by nature is full of juice, but without squeezing it, the juice does not come out. This is a very nice analogy. But similarly, Krishna is full of mercy. But without the devotee's eagerness, that mercy does not come out. Like you have sugar cane, but if you don't put it through the machine, through the rollers, or somehow squeeze it, the juice doesn't come out. So Krishna is full of mercy, but he won't drop that mercy. You can't get that mercy out unless you squeeze him. So what is the squeezing process? Do you put Krishna through some steel rollers with a little machine, little motor, wah 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 wah? No, the process for extracting the mercy of Krishna is the eagerness of the devotee. So this word kripaya is indicating eagerness. He's not just saying, oh, Krishna, be merciful. He's crying out, hey, Nandanandan, ayi Nandanandan. Ayi means like a crying. He's saying, hey, listen, hey, Nandanandan, I'm really, really suffering, terribly suffering. Kripaya, please be merciful. Please. Like every mother and father, they have children. And the children always, they say, please. And the mother says, forget it. And then and they say, please. And they say, forget it. And they say, please. You know, they use this mantra, this please mantra. This pleasing mantra. They say, please, in English at least, maybe French or Manipuri different. And they say, please. And then finally the mother says, oh, all right, you know. So this is the eagerness of the child to invoke the mother's mercy. So this is the essential element. The devotee must have this eagerness. Without the devotee's eagerness, the mercy of Krishna will not come out. Therefore, the devotee must worship Krishna with great eagerness while patiently waiting for the mercy to descend. There's a verse here in Bhakti Vachan Rahasyam. That indicates this mood. The devotee must worship Krishna with great eagerness while patiently waiting for the mercy to descend. And of course, the verse that's mentioned here. Does anyone have any idea? Bhagavatam verse? Yes. There's Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions this point. He's explaining this meaning of the word kripaya. Because part of our bhajan, non-bhajan, we're supposed to understand all the word-for-word meaning of this shikshastikam and deeply meditate on the individual word meaning and conceptions in relation to the holy name and the principle of asakti, and then the full verse together with the holy name. So a prayer which explains Bhagavan's mercy is given in Bhagavatam. So the word we're discussing here is kripaya. Ai nanda tanushikinkaram patitam vam shameva vamvado. Kripaya tava parabhankaja. So kripaya. So this verse is given a title that good and bad, it's all the mercy of Krishna. We were discussing this point this morning. So kripaya, in this verse, Lord Brahma is speaking of a devotee's internal attitude while he's engaged in devotional activities. Tate no kampam su samikshamano vanjana evatma kritam vipakam ridvag vapur bir viradan namaste jiveta yo mukti pade sadaya bak. Translation. One who accepts as your mercy the results of his own actions, as well as the happiness and distress of his parabdha karma, who endures them with an undisturbed mind, and who maintains his life by offering himself unto you by body, mind, and words, is eligible to attain your lotus feet, which are the shelter of liberation. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, I noted his commentary here. A devotee accepts that Krishna is making him experience happiness or distress out of his mercy, and ultimately Krishna is directing him to his service. The devotee thinks that Krishna knows what is best for me, just like a father does what is best for his child. It's a very deep and important Tika Vishnu Chakravarti commenting on this similarly important verse of Bhagavatam, Brahma Vandanam, from 14th chapter of 10th canto, verse 8. And this is what this kripaya is all about, that this is what it means to be attached to Krishna. Because this whole verse, Ayinandatana Kintakaram, is about asakti, Krishna asakti. Asakti, then bhava, then prema. So all of this all these features and aspects of attachment have to be worked out. We have to work out our karma. We have to work out our asakti at the level of nam bhajan. While chanting nam, we have to become attached to Krishna in all these different ways and aspects if we want Krishna to recognize our attempts and bestow upon us bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. So, in this word, kripaya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is trying to bring us to this conception of seeing that whatever happens to us, good or bad in this life, is the mercy of Krishna. And Vishwanath makes a very sweet comparison here of like a child, a very innocent and dependent child. He's not clever. The little child, when he's 5 or 6 years old and he's facing some difficulty, he doesn't say, oh, let me consult my astrologer. You know, the 5-year-old boy, he's facing some difficulty in a play lot with his friends. He says, oh, I must be crossing through Rahu or something. I better consult my astrologer. So he goes to his astrologer, and astrologer says, yes, this is a difficult time for you. From the age of 5 to 7, you'll be going through Ketu, and you should be careful. You should do some Hanuman puja and wear a diamond ring on your finger and fast every Monday. You're laughing. You think it sounds ridiculous. But it's just as ridiculous if an adult does the same thing. Because the child, as I mentioned earlier, he sees his mother and father as God. He doesn't think that they're in the bhavambodhi. He doesn't think they're in the ocean of birth and death, and they're struggling and suffering from greed and anger and lust like him. He doesn't realize that till he grows up. He's innocent. He's saralata. So he just sees my father. Oh, he slapped me. Oh, I was bad. Well, I guess it's for my good. His father slaps him. Why is this? Why have I suddenly gotten slapped? Calls Jyotishi. My father slapped me after I came home from school. Can you check my chart? Am I crossing a bad time now? So for us, we are supposed to be, we say that, what do we say? That they say in the Bible that we must become child, something. We must become childlike before the Lord. That the spiritual aspirant who is approaching the kingdom of God, he must become childlike, innocent like a child before the Lord. And they have other phrases like, the meek and humble shall inherit the kingdom of God. So the children are like this in some extent. They're innocent. They're dependent on their mother and father. So Vishwanath, he invokes that analogy here in his commentary on Brahma's verse by saying that the devotee thinks, of course, if we don't think like this, that means that we're not devotees. Because Vishwanath is saying, the devotee thinks. This is how the devotee thinks. So if we don't think like that, then the converse is also true. The devotee thinks that Krishna knows what is best for me. But now we have to say that the ISKCON devotee thinks, or the New Age devotee thinks, that the astrologer knows what is best for me. Just like a father does what is best. So he's saying here, Vishnu's saying, the devotee thinks that Krishna, my father, Ahambija Pradapita, he's telling in Gita that I am the seed-giving father of all living entities, even Russians and Americans and Frenchmen and everybody. So the devotee actually thinks, it's kripaya. Everything is Krishna's kripa. The good and the bad, it's all his mercy. He's my father. Oh, he slapped me. Oh, that's my father's mercy. Oh, he gave me $100, raise in my allowance. Oh, that's his mercy. Oh, he bought me a car for my birthday. That's his mercy. Oh, he's locked me in my room. That's his mercy. He's grounded me for 1 week. He took away my car keys. Oh, that's his mercy. He cut my allowance. That's his mercy. He pulled out my phone line. Or he gave me a new cell phone. It's like this. So the devotee thinks, Krishna knows what is best for me, just like a father does what is best for his child. Because the child, let's say the ideal father. Maybe some fathers aren't so ideal. But the ideal father or ideal mother, they are selflessly serving their children and trying to do what is best for them. So this is the devotee. He accepts that Krishna is making him, the devotee accepts that Krishna is making him experience happiness or distress out of his mercy. And ultimately, Krishna is directing that devotee to his eternal divine service. So we'll stop there. Is there any questions? Dukkha bhoga kari nija krita karma phale kaya mano vakke tava charana kamale bhakti kari katte kala tava kripa ashe Mukti Pada Tava Pada Paya Anayase. That's a Bengali version by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Dukkha Bhoga Kari Nicha Krita Karma Phal. It's a very good verse if anyone has any inclination to learn verses from Bhagavatam. This verse is very, very powerful. Tateno Kampam Shushimik Shimano. 10:14:8. There's so much realization in this verse. All of our Gaudiya Vaishnavacharyas, they're always preaching on this verse. Whether it's the banks of Radhakund, or whether it's Delhi, or Chicago, or France. This verse is very often quoted by the most Rasika advanced devotees in the Gaudiya Vaishnava world. This verse by Brahma. And many of the verses of his prayers, 14th chapter, the prayers of Brahma in 14th chapter, 10th canto, are very much anukul for sadhana bhakti. Especially this verse. Because if we study this verse, we get great determination. Great tolerance comes into us. And great determination. And we really start to realize that everything is Krishna's mercy. And this verse helps us become attached to Krishna more and more. That's why there's only 22 verses in this chapter about asakti. This is a secret of bhajan. This is a secret of bhajan at the level of asakti. Right? This is Sri Bhajan Rahasyam. Bhajan at the level of ruchi. Bhajan at the level of nartanivriti. Bhajan at the level of asakti. So this is bhajan. The secret of doing bhajan at the level of asakti. The secret of doing harinam bhajan by chanting that holy name, one will become firmly attached to Krishna. So this is one of those 22 secrets of this principle. This principle stage of devotion which precludes bhava and prema, asakti. This is so crucial. So this is important. Because all of us, I would like to think that all of us are interested in Krishna prema. That's why we're sitting here. And therefore we should study at least the idea of this verse. If we can't master the Sanskrit, at least the conception and the idea, and pray to Lord Brahma and the Acharyas that we can realize something from his own revelations. These are the revelations he got in Braj. Now we're in Braj, and we're aspiring to be eternal residents of Braj, so we can also try to pray that the realizations that Brahma received in Vrindavan will also come in our heart.
When spiritual master is angry with disciple, chastising him, punishing him, we used to say that he loves disciple. It's
an expression of his love. If he doesn't love a disciple, he won't chastise him.
But sometimes I understand there can be a reason for spiritual master to be angry. So disciple does some mistakes or misbehave. So, and maybe that anger is not a show of mercy, but actually disappointment, or like real anger. It's not sign of progress of disciple that he's doing everything right. So spiritual master loves him, but it means that disciple is doing something wrong if he's always chastised and punished. Can you say anything about it?
What is your question exactly?
Question is that how not to be like see it as a when spiritual master chastise disciple, then we say that they have relationships, so disciple is under care, but sometimes disciple just disappoint spiritual master and it is not anymore his progress, but he's about to lose the mercy of spiritual master, but he will not pay attention anymore afterwards. So how not to, because at the time of punishment, we don't think that, oh, this is mercy. We actually feel like something terrible is happening. So it can be out of love, it can be out of frustration, also the same anger of Krishna or Guru. How to see different?
I mean, the guru, this concept of guru being frustrated with disciple I don't think you can really say that guru experiences frustration with disciple, because in the Hari Bhakti Vilas it explains that guru, one of the lakshana of guru, characteristics of guru, is vatsalya bhav. He has the mood of a parent, a mother, a father, for their child. So the guru always has this love, this feeling of love and concern for the devotee, for his disciple. And the disciple may waver from Krishna consciousness, he may disobey an order, he may act foolishly, he may do so many different things. And the guru may rectify him by chastising him or punishing him or whatever, but it doesn't change. The undercurrent of love is always flowing. Whatever his actions are towards the devotee, it's not that the guru is affected by these moods of frustration and anger and all these things. He's always acting as a well-wisher. This is what Prabhupada is saying. The guru is a well-wisher. He's always trying to guide and push his devotee forward. If the devotee, you were mentioning one point in your question, if the devotee gives up Krishna consciousness or leaves the spiritual master, doesn't follow him anymore, the guru won't be angry. If he's angry, he'll be upset with himself. He'll think, oh, I wasn't able to save this person. I wasn't able to bring this person back to Godhead. He'll feel bad about himself, but he won't have any anger towards the disciple that actually leaves him and gives him up. He's not going to say, oh, why he left. Guru won't think like that, proper guru. He'll just feel sorrowful. Like the father, if the son runs away from the father will be, and he comes back later, of course, he'll be welcomed with open arms and the love will be there. So guru always has a loving mood towards the disciple at all times. There's anger. You said the disciple may perceive it as anger, and that the guru is frustrated. The guru is not frustrated. The guru is satisfied in his service to Krishna. It's like a teacher. Teacher does his service. And the guru is equipoised. He's equipoised. If the disciple takes the instructions and goes forward, that's very good. If he has it independently, makes aparad or gives up the instructions, the guru prays for him. Guru prays to Krishna. He doesn't become angry. Oh, why you went? Because Maya is so powerful that some disciples get taken away. Rather, the guru, he feels very badly within himself. Prabhupada used to cry when he heard his disciples left. It's in Lilamrita. When one of his servants left, Prabhupada started crying. And the guru has so much love that disciple can't understand how much love the guru has for disciple. And Prabhupada would make all arrangements. Oh, go see him. Go visit him. Tell him to forget everything. Just tell him to come see me. So I don't see that guru has anger or frustration. I don't see that. Let's take Prabhupada as a classic guru, that his life is very, very open and public. We can read so much about his life and see and hear, and we've experienced and we met his disciples. So let's take Prabhupada as a classic guru. And we don't see this type of moods in him of anger or frustration. You follow? Yes.
Someone from France told me a story. When Srila Prabhupada devotee left little bit and went back to Harvard and catch AIDS within a month. And he was in the hospital with 30 kilo, cannot move, nothing. At the time of death, his wife was there, she was also a devotee before. He sits on the bed and said, Prabhupada, and he left. So when I heard this, Srila Prabhupada came back for me. He welcomed me at this time. That's my understanding.
Yeah, there's that story.
He was using drugs, catch AIDS. You can live a crazy life. And at the end of the life, he saw Srila Prabhupada. This is the work of Srila Prabhupada, not his.
Yeah, the guru is... And the guru is always there. The guru is always there for the disciple. At every moment, at every time. Yeah, I mean, Like the father, the children go anywhere, they go crazy and do all crazy things, but father's always there, come back. Doesn't say, you know, he opens the door, come in. Generally. There are exceptions also. And Prabhupada is the role model for the guru. Because guru is a tattva. Guru represents, you know, Krishna. So as much, how much forgiving Krishna is, how much Krishna's not angry. Krishna's all forgiving, all loving, all kind, all compassionate. Moment by moment, life after life. So guru is the same thing. At all times he's compassionate, forgiving, all loving, understanding. Isn't it? That's what we saw in Prabhupada. And his followers, they try their best, I think, to follow Prabhupada's example. And when one really is transparent, then all these qualities, guru is a tattva. So you see so much, when you meet gurus, there's so much similarity in all of them. They all have their personalities. But as far as the qualities they exhibit, they're all basically the same. Because they're all operating from a base of Krishna consciousness. They're all operating as Krishna's representatives. So as Krishna's forgiving, they're forgiving. As Krishna's tolerant, they're tolerant. Although they have individual personalities. And may express their tolerance and forgiveness and corrective measures in different ways. But still, there's a purity, there's a transparency in it. Because guru is liberated. So guru is not affected by the gunas, you know. He's affected by the gunas and how he